My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to What Culture Gaming. I'm Scott, joined by Josh.
Hello, Scott.
Josh, my friend, on today's news, there were other PlayStation exclusives that were apparently ready to go to be shown at the PlayStation Showcase that didn't get shown.
Ubisoft's Prince of Persia remake has apparently restarted development at another developer.
And Lord of the Rings Gollum is the worst game of the year so far, according to many reviews and the Metacritic score itself. We'll break all this stuff down, starting with the PlayStation exclusive stuff. Now, this was written up by Insider Gaming's Tom Henderson, just writing up his general thoughts on the recent showcase. Obviously, that thing wasn't received that well online. We had a nice enough time.
We reacted
to it. There's a lot of new IP in there. We thought it was pretty good. But still, the general reaction is very negative, and obviously it's understandable that a lot of people wanted a lot more of these Sony first party stuff. Where's Naughty Dog's next game? You know, where's Sucker Punch? Where's Ghost of Tsushima 2? Whatever. Insider Gaming's Tom Henderson, whilst writing up his thoughts, like I said, did say it's understood that a lot of the games we're waiting on seeing are pretty much ready, so I'm not sure why Sony decided to wait this time around. Thoughts, GB?
It is a strange move, because like we have said multiple times now, Scott Telford, we enjoyed the showcase, yeah. But like the lack of first party studios, the lack of first party presence was very much noted. Like you said, Where were all of those games? Where is The Last of Us Factions, which was promised to get more footage in the first half of the year? It still could come. It's Summer Games Fest, but it feels a little bit weird to not have it at Sony's own thing when it feels like, you know, a jewel in its crown. It's Naughty Dog, it's The Last of Us, It's their first foray into trying to capture the live service market. So yeah, it is a little bit strange, and it does make me think that it is just a kind of 12-month roadmap or whatever. I know I've said this before, because otherwise I don't know why you would hold back stuff that we already know exists. That's the big, like, kind of question for me. When we did our predictions video, right?
Yes.
I was predicting Death Stranding 2. I was predicting The Last of Us Factions, and I thought they were safe bets, and it was funny because the people in the comments were saying, these aren't wild predictions, these are safe bets. Because
we'll definitely get them.
Yeah, because they've already been announced, and it was expected to see them now, and it is kind of strange. Maybe it's just a testament to how much Sony has in the works right now and how much is imminent that they didn't need to show those games, but it's ultimately strange, and I can totally get why people were disappointed with the lack of presence there.
Yeah, same. I think the play that they're doing, I guess we'll see across the next few weeks, I think that they, and it, you can, the end point of what I'm about to say is like, well, why even do a PlayStation showcase? But I think that they have a whole bunch of stuff they're going to be rolling out across the Summer Games Fest window, because they have the Summer Games Fest show itself with Jeff Keighley, which is a platform that they'll be sharing with Xbox announcements and other third-party announcements. There was a whole thing Jim Ryan said going into the showcase that they want to have total mind share in terms of making sure that everybody's thinking about PlayStation all the time. And I think one of the best ways to do that is to go directly up against your competitors and then drop The Last of Us Factions, or drop a teaser for Ghost of Tsushima 2, or reveal what Naughty Dog's working on. Because on the Xbox side, during the showcase, they were tweeting a graphic showing the various third-party games that were at the showcase are also going to be on Xbox. They were just like, hey, don't worry about it. We have all these games too. Some of them are likely going to be on Game Pass as a direct way of competing. And Xbox have been tweeting that they have their direct coming up, and they have various games to talk about, which kind of hints at the idea that they could just go all first party themselves and try and steal some of the thunder. So I think some of that stuff is interesting in terms of the way that the Summer Game Fest stuff is going to roll out. Maybe their biggest dogs in the fight are yet to be let loose.
Well, here's the thing, right? Jeff Keighley, as we know, loves Hideo Kojima and Kojima Productions. He loves having Kojima on his stage, so it makes sense to me that we would see more Death Stranding there rather than at Sony Showcase. At the same time, The Last of Us Factions was not revealed at last year's Summer Game Fest, but we got Neil Druckmann on stage talking about it. We got concept art, so it also makes sense to me that that game would also be at Summer Games Fest, and it does exactly what you said. It saves two big hitters to go up against Microsoft and to try and steal some of the headlines from their kind of blank canvas that they have going into the next few weeks.
It is pretty damn blank.
Yeah, 100%, man. And it gives them a couple of games to be like, no, no, we've got this other stuff as well. We're not saving everything for ourselves. We're trickling these projects out. Whether that's a good move, I don't know. Mm-hmm. But those two games in particular, I would expect to see and would be extremely shocked and disappointed, Sony, if they're not at Summer Games Fest.
Yeah, same. Let us know what you think down in the comments below of the way the showcase rolled out and the kind of things that, you know, the potential conspiracy theory style stuff Sony might have in store for the next few weeks of Summer Games Fest. Next story is the Prince of Persia remake restarting development, or at least we're calling it that because of the way that these comments come across on the official Ubisoft blog. Now, this is from the producer, Jean-Swan Farnode, saying in terms of the development stage, we're in the conception stage right now. Since we took over the project from Ubisoft Mumbai and Ubisoft Pune, we've been looking at feedback from the community and finding our own way of delivering the game. We're building up the team, defining the priorities, putting prototypes together, testing elements, and looking at how we can include community feedback in the development as well. It's still in an early stage, and players should not expect to hear more about the game this year, but rest assured that we're all putting our strengths and heart into the project. And there's another quote from the director as well, but the way this reads, obviously the Prince of Persia remake was reallocated to a different team. Yeah. Ubisoft Montreal were the original Prince of Persia developers, or one of them. So yeah, I think they've just wiped the slate clean and they're just starting all over again.
Absolutely. It sounds like it's Scott Tilford. And you know what? It really does suck for Ubisoft Mumbai, because when we got like interviews with those developers, they seemed so passionate about the project.
Yeah.
In my head, I just kind of feel like they were hamstrung by Ubisoft themselves, who I imagine, similar with Splinter Cell, are kind of just like, these are old franchises. If you can bring them back in a way, do it. We're not going to allocate many resources. And the game that we saw a few years ago, that being the Prince of Persia Sands of Time initial remake, looked a bit wonky. It didn't look as high profile as you expect a remake to look in the 2020s era. It didn't look like a Resident Evil, you know what I mean? It didn't have that caliber. So hopefully, with this switching developer, Ubisoft has realized they can't treat the old franchises like an afterthought. They need to put as much time and as much money and as many resources into them as they do in Assassin's Creed or something else, if they want stuff like Splinter Cell and Prince of Persia to have that same cultural cachet that they did back in the day.
I think as well, it's interesting in terms of what remake they're going for, and I'll bring a quote in from one of the directors here, because if you think about where we're at with remakes, like, you have on one side of the things, you got Resident Evil 2, you got Final Fantasy 7 remake that are completely ground up overhauls. You also have things like the Crash Bandicoot trilogy remake, the Spyro trilogy remake, that are like keeping some of the same level geometry and overhauling the visuals, but like they still play largely the same.
Yeah.
I'm curious what, you know, they do with this. And so you have the developer, Michael McIntyre, saying that the gameplay mix of acrobatics, combat, and puzzles, those things have to stay. You don't keep those and then double the amount of combat and still say it's the Sands of Time. So like, it's interesting in terms of the trajectory of that trilogy, because Warrior Within was like the most over the top. I mean, I love that game. Same. It's just godsmack, the game. And I loved it back in like 2006 or whatever. But they, in terms of that middle installment, was way more, you know, had way more tood and was way more aggressive in the combat model. And then Two Thrones was all stealthy. So it's like that original game's identity is very special. You need to get that right.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass.
With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
I sometimes when we talk about remakes, one of the most scariest phrases and words is, we're going to modernize this. We've got some modernizations in mind.
Over shoulder camera.
Absolutely. It would be very easy to go to Prince of Persia and say, look, no one cares about puzzles and platforming in 2023. Up the combat, and we'll keep a few wall running segments in there, and we'll call it a day. We'll modernize the gameplay. We'll make it close to Assassin's Creed or whatever. So this quote to me is really promising, that the fact that they're going to try to maintain the gameplay balance of the original and keep the spirit of that game, which, like you said, before we got to the second and third game, was way more fantastical, way more whimsical almost. I think they even mention it at one point that the original had a narration that the next two games didn't have. It was like somebody telling the story of the game you're playing. It was a story within a story, and it had this kind of storybook feel. And they were talking about maintaining that, as that's an integral part of its identity as well. So to be honest, on paper at least, it sounds like they're making some cool and interesting moves.
It's, the thing is with Prince of Persia, it's fascinating because they obviously rebooted it once in 2008/2009. I think the game came out in 2009 and it didn't do very well. It felt like it was way too soon for a reboot, even though that game is like really super solid. Like, the art style's awesome and a lot of people really liked that game, but at the time it wasn't received that well. But Assassin's Creed started as a Prince of Persia game. It was span off into its own thing, but the idea being, or at least that I'm getting at, is that Prince of Persia was always their literal crown jewel. It was always this thing that they nurtured really well, that Sands of Time was received so well, the time mechanics were awesome, and there was, I don't know when that, what year it was, but a little few years ago, Prince of Persia 4's gameplay leaked. It was like what was going to be Prince of Persia 4, and that was more like a Soulsian thing with like a specific boss battles and whatever, but usually when you're remaking a classic, it's to stimulate interest and try and move into a new installment again. So it seems like this is integral to the future of Prince of Persia overall, and then what the hell do you do with that IP?
Well, Scott Telford, I've mentioned it a few times right now, but Splinter Cell is also getting a remake, and we haven't seen anything on that since Ubisoft announced that it was happening, and hopefully they are taking a similar approach to that and going to release another interview with those developers where they tell us that they're also trying to stay true to the original in that they're giving it the time and care and attention that it needs, because I love Splinter Cell and I love Prince of Persia, and I want the remakes of those games to be good and, like you said, be good enough to inspire proper sequels or proper reboots that aren't just the games we've already played.
Yeah, and it's also that weird thing with Ubi where they are in such a rut right now, as they're doubling down on Assassin's Creed. There was that whole Assassin's Creed live stream where they confirmed like 7 new games or whatever it was.
You know what's hilarious?
How
many videos and podcasts have we done on the PlayStation Showcase and not talked about the new Assassin's Creed game, Mirage?
That's how forgettable that game was. It looks very solid for what it is, but it is just more Assassin's Creed, and specifically they're trying to tap back into where the franchise was back in 2007, which ties into overall what I'm saying about Ubi, that they used to be a lot more experimental across the 2000s, with the likes of Prince of Persia, with Splinter Cell. They all had specific franchise identities. And it's interesting tapping back into that now because, like you said, how much of their modern identity do they then bring back in? It seems like the new AC, Mirage, is a stealth game again, more like the original Assassin's Creed was. But as for how Prince of Persia gets Tret, we'll have to keep an eye on it. Final reality that we're living in is Lord of the Rings Gollum is an absolute tire fire. This was something that I was going to buy anyway out of just sheer curiosity. We covered this, was it 6 years ago?
A long time ago.
Because the idea of it was always hilarious. It was always like, no one was asking for a Gollum game.
I really was. Scott Telford.
Go on.
Oh, man. Look how they massacred my boy, at least if the reviews are to be believed in the footage that I've seen. Look, I'm not going to comment on its quality right now because I've not played the game yet. But the reason I haven't played the game yet is because the reviews scared me off. This game, obviously, it has a lot of baggage around it. Ever since it was announced all those years ago, people were saying, why on earth are you making Lord of the Rings Gollum? What? Out of all of the characters you could choose, why Gollum? Mm-hmm. I thought you could make a really compelling, interesting game with Gollum at the heart of it that would be piss funny, that would tap into some humor, be a nice laugh. And it does seem like the game is a laugh, but for all the wrong reasons. You know, I've joked for a while now that was going to be my game of the year. And I knew it wouldn't have the quality of like a big AAA production. But I thought it would at least have like a little spark of something worth playing. But man, looking at the footage and reading the reviews, it's currently at like a 38 on Metacritic. It's literally the worst reviewed game of the year. I just can't help but think, I wanted you to be good.
I want to read a couple of things out here because going into Lord of the Rings Gollum, I don't feel like any of us really knew what that game was. We didn't know what genre it was aiming for. There was mentions of Gollum and Sméagol as like sort of twin personalities, and you had to make various dialogue option choices as to which one, whether it was good or bad, Paragon, Renegade, whatever. But it was always that thing of what are they building? Is it a stealth game? Is there Gollum combat? Am I unlocking different hairstyles for him or deluxe loincloths? I don't know. But the way that it's come together, what you actually do, besides the fact you're remarking on how terrible the new UI is. A lot of people comparing the game that was shown off in the various screenshots from years ago versus the way that it's come out now, where it is just the character model of Gollum with plain text alongside him. No drop shadow, no effects put on that text or whatever. Besides all the massive downgrades and everything else, I watched Skillup's review for this at the beginning of it, because even he said he had to bail halfway through because it was just so abysmal to play through. But he said the whole opening of the game consists of doing lots of repetitive tasks. You're sort of stuck in prison. He used the phrase slave simulator because it was just so repetitive and so drudging in terms of getting through that, and the performance across the board is terrible. There is lots of footage of bugs and glitches and everything else, lots of AI things going left, right and center, kind of like Redfall, lots of just character models all over the place, leading to a 2 out of 10 from GameSpot, a 4 out of 10 from IGN, and a 40 currently on Metacritic.
It's gained two
since last night.
Great.
But still, that game overall seems like an absolute mess, so just buyer beware for the first weekend that it's out. Will you still be getting
Not at £60, I won't be, Scott Tilford. And that's the thing, like, I think Skillup may have also mentioned it in his review, but if this was a lower priced game, I think a lot of people would be cutting it more slack. But the fact that it is selling at a premium price point has all of these additional microtransactions that you can get if you buy, like, the deluxe version again from Skillup's review, that's where, you know, you kind of think, why and how have we gotten to this situation? This isn't a budget title. They're trying to sell you this for the same price as Elden Ring went for last year, and that's when I think you've got to start being kind of critical and be like, well, I'm not going to buy this for as much as I wanted to have a laugh with it, because £60 is £60, and there's a lot of good games to choose this year.
Very true.
And that doesn't seem like one of them. And again, you know, I want to be able to talk about it more authoritatively. I want to be able to say I've played it and this is what I think, but like I said, too many good games to play, and these reviews have scared me off.
I think the way that they handled the rollout as well, where it was just zero gameplay videos, that you had to really go looking if you wanted to see any hands-on footage of it whatsoever. It feels like they're just trying to cash in on the Lord of the Rings IP, or at least that's all you have now, because the game itself isn't recommendable by itself. Just throw that in there as just something that seems like it's released in a hell of a state. For now, I've been Scott from MoreCulture.com.
I've been Josh from MoreCulture.com.
Please check out this video right here, and also subscribe to us for daily gaming news videos. Hope you're all doing very well, and we'll catch you next time.
Bye-bye.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, welcome to the Next Wave podcast. Consider us your chief AI officer in your business. My name is Matt Wolf. I have the number one YouTube channel in the AI space. I also run futuretools.com, and I'm joined by my co-host, Nathan Lands, founder of lore.com. We want to bring you the latest AI news and trends, show you how you can use AI in your business and personal life, and help make it super easy for you to understand and execute. We're going to equip you with the knowledge to thrive in this upcoming wave of change.